Dear, when you smiled at me, I heard a melody. It haunted me from the start. Something inside of me.
What do we got here, Coach?
Start
saying, "Zing went the strings on my heart."
That is a voice. That is.
That is a voice.
Not the casters, but the coasters.
That's right.
He always takes everything in fishing terms.
That's right. Do a little shagging here with this?
Yeah, you can do the shagging.
Got my mind in one place.
One, two, three, kick.
All right, it is indeed the morning show presented by St. Mary's Medical Group. Dave and Logan along with you. And former Georgia head coach and College Football Hall of Famer Jim Donnan here in the studio with us. Our last Tuesday show of 2019. Happy New Year to everybody. Dogs tomorrow getting set to take on Baylor, 8:45. And Coach, our roster's going to look a little different tomorrow.
Yeah, you know, it's a tough deal. Hasn't really been addressed a whole lot about some of these deals. Obviously, with Wilson and Thomas, you understand that. And then in the case of J.R. Reed, he did have an injury that would have been very difficult to play. He probably could have played. I don't know. I'm not a trainer. But, you know, he's got a good future ahead of him. And so he, after checking with his parents and everything like that, I think he just decided that he wasn't full tilt. And then the other guys, I'm really not sure what happened on some of them. But, you know, as we talked about, University of Georgia is a hard school. And, you know, they made a rule a couple years ago with NCAA that you had to pass at least 6 hours per semester to continue on and play after the semester was over. And I think just looking at the periphery, maybe some of these guys didn't pass 6 hours. I don't know. I don't know if that's true or what. And then you got a lot of rumors about drug tests. Who knows what happens on that? The NCAA mandates that they test 18 players on every team. You know, they come in and do these random tests, and I don't know if any of our guys tested or not. Who knows? But we do have several more than normal for sure. But I'm excited to see Lewis Seen back there. Every chance he had last year, he played good. I think we won't be near as down on defense as we were last year when DeAndre Walker didn't play, when Baker didn't play. You know, Seen has played a lot. Stevenson's going to be able to come in for Devon Wilson. Devon had an injury that he required some medical attention, and he's not going to be able to play. So Stevenson can come in there and play. We saw what he was able to do all year, number seven. Offensive line, I really like Cade Mays. You know, I think he's a really good player, and certainly Jamari Salyer. The biggest difference there in our line was, Ben Cleveland not being able to play, and people say maybe that was academic. I'm not sure on that either. But so Erickson's going to have to step in there at guard and do the job.
How do you like him?
You know, he's a very, very good player. He just doesn't have much experience. And the thing that I like about his opportunity is if we were going against a team like Auburn that plays a guy up on your head, you know, like a 1-2-3 technique, one inside shoulder, two head up, or three outside shoulder, he's just not a massive guy to move people like that. But they play an odd front where they have a nose guard, and so there won't be anybody on his head, you know. I mean, there'll be a linebacker off the ball, but nobody right on the line of scrimmage on him. So I think he'll be able to combo block with the center and the tackle and get on these linebackers. He's pretty quick. So they play a different defense, than we see. A lot of high school teams run the 3-3-5, you know, that Joe Lee Dunn mastered there at Mississippi State. And they got an inordinate amount of stunts that they run off of it. But basically five secondary guys, three front, and three linebackers.
So the one guy, James Lynch, has 12.5 sacks, 18.5 tackles for loss. Bravian Roy has 4.5 sacks, 12 tackles for loss, and they got three other guys that have at least 8.5 tackles for loss.
Well, those two ends, I think 92-9 or 93-9, are just havoc. You know, they really wreak havoc with you. They rush the passer well. They come inside, play the run. And, you know, they're long and lean in the secondary. And this is a team, to me, that reminds me of if you just look at them and watch them, they're a lot like Boise State from a standpoint, extremely well coached, always in the game, know what to do, have a bunch of guys that maybe aren't as highly recruited but have been around for a long time and have come off the map. I mean, 2 years ago they didn't win a game. They're 0-11 and 1 or something like that. And Rule's done a great job with them, but in the mid-2000s, though, that was a team of the Big 12 when Browse was there. I mean, they were running up and down the field on everybody. They built that new stadium and had a lot of things going for them, and then they had that, you know, just horrible thing on campus with all the, that sexual harassment and things that happened to them. So, but they got a good quarterback. He's very, very good at running their attack. And, you know, we're going to have to play. I mean, there's no question about it. I mean, we've played more talented teams athletically, but as far as being well-coached and knowing what to do, we're going to have to go out there and execute.
Let me ask just sort of a straightforward question here. A lot of people are having this debate. Because of the roster being what it is and a lot of young guys getting their chances, a lot of guys sitting out for, you know, reasons that they want to sit out for NFL purposes, there's a ton we're going to be watching and excited about watching the game, but where do you rate in importance the final score? Obviously, we want Georgia to win, but if Georgia does not win this game, is that going to derail any feelings toward what you're going to watch during the game itself?
Well, it's just going to add to the fire of, you know, what if, why didn't we win SEC, all that stuff. But, you know, you got a team in LSU is kind of a, you know, once-in-a-lifetime team right now. It'd be really surprising if Clemson beats them. They could beat them, that's for sure, because Clemson's won 29 straight. But all you got to do, if anybody is lower than whale manure right now, what they need to do is Thursday night, cut on that Under Armour game and watch the guys we got coming in there playing in the game. Watch Van Pran. Watch and everybody says we don't have Broderick Jones now. I hope that I feel like we're going to get him. Watch Roseme. Watch Arian Smith. Yesterday, won the fastest guy on both teams by 2 yards. Human rocket, just like Mecole Hardman. You know, watch. We talked about Jalen Carter. Darnell Washington hasn't signed, but he's going to announce, hopefully, tight end 6'8", that can be a matchup just exactly like Gronkowski. I mean, that type of player. And then Zach Evans, the number one back in the country, coming in along with these guys. We're going to have 6 5-star players added to our roster between now and next year. And then in the other game on Saturday, the Army game, you watch Tate Ratledge, offensive tackle, big kid from up in Darlington. And just an unbelievable recruiting year. And people say, well, you know, hey, we recruit good, but we don't win. We won 11 games. We've beaten everybody we're supposed to beat in the conference, beating our rivals 12 straight times. There's a lot of good things, but, you know, you want to make that next step. But there's no question, if you look at the difference between LSU and these other teams, Alabama lost to LSU by 3. Auburn lost to them by 5 in a rainstorm. And then we were in the game the first half, but playing without our best receiver, our best slot receiver, and our best back. So I think the question is, I'm rambling a little bit, I don't think it's going to be the end of the world, but I would think it would be a tremendous upset if we lose this game.
Sure.
Well, just look back to last year.
We're a better team. And last year,
when Texas won, Texas this, Texas that, and what's going on with Georgia? Well, how much did that carry over to this year? Georgia went 11-1, and Texas went 7-5.
And fired both coordinators. And, you know, could – if they lose tonight to Utah, like everybody's saying, I mean, this guy's in a tenuous situation down there right now. But you know, I'm not trying to put lipstick on a pig situation, but we had a tough loss there. There's no question about it. And the thing that makes it worse is just the way we lost to South Carolina, you know. But still, it's hard to win. You know, Coach Mullen's going crazy about how great they are winning 11 games. We've already won 11. You know, I mean,
and last beat night, them.
I had the same thought.
Last night you were thinking, like, we're a top 10 team, maybe a top 5 team, you know. And last year they got ranked ahead of us because we lost and they won and beat Michigan. But this team that we're playing is a good football team, a well coached. It'd be interesting to see how this scenario with their coach being mentioned for all these pro jobs, what kind of, you know. But for
how would that be a distraction just for tomorrow night, just for these 36 hours or whatever?
It shouldn't be. And I think the coach has done a good job of talking to his team about it. You know, from what I've read, you know, the players, they had the players that were interviewed said, coach called a meeting, said, look, there's going to be a lot of speculation about me, and I can't control that. Let's get this game over with. I'll keep you posted on what I'm doing. But, you know, it's natural for them to consider me because I was a coach for the Giants, you know, in 2012. And, you know, I'm your coach, and if anything's different, I'll tell you. That's all you can do.
Back in when you were coaching, I know this new thing. I say new. I'm curious how new it is with players skipping bowl games for their NFL draft prospects, and we understand why. But was that ever a conversation? Excuse me, a conversation with your players when you were coaching, or is this brand new to the sport?
Well, certainly there was a deal about guys going pro. I mean, coming out early. You know, like
right.
Champ Bailey came out early, and Hines Ward and Robert Edwards decided to stay, but this is new vogue here about skipping the games. I've never heard of that until a couple of years ago. So,
yeah.
But you know, agents are so preeminent now. You've got everything's out there. You know, with social media, everything going on. So any kind of interaction a guy has with anybody, everybody knows about it. So. You can't blame a guy like Andrew Thomas. Come on. He's going to be the fifth guy. If we were playing in the playoffs, he'd be playing. He's a great team man. But you can't blame the guy. I mean, he's – and Wilson, just prolific stats with his physical prowess, the way he looks and the way he can move and the way he can, you know, play tackle. I mean, the guys like that, just not many like it around. And that's why the teams that are really protecting a passer will – have these angular guys with long arms that can just reach out against the highest paid guys in the NFL next to quarterback are defensive ends. They get all the money because they can rush the passer and corners because that's the name of the game. You got to protect the passer and you got to defend the pass. I mean, that's the way the game's set up there. The one thing's changed a little bit this year with the Baltimore Ravens running the option with Lamar Thomas. You're seeing that these NFL teams don't know how to play it. I mean, they don't know what to do against it because they've never seen it.
Yeah.
He's a beast, Lamar Jackson. That man can play.
They can run the ball too. I mean,
yeah.
But we're seeing now in the NFL where teams are starting to wise up. It's like instead of trying to make Lamar Jackson fit a certain system, we're going to build our system around him too.
Yeah, you give Coach Harbaugh a lot of credit.
Yeah.
I mean, he had Flacco there who's in toward the end of his career, there's no question, but he had a great career at Baltimore, just up and down sense of direction there with their offense. Their defense has always been pretty good. And now they just come in there with a system where you can't get the ball away from. And their defense is good enough that make a couple stops, and they just been on a tremendous run. It's hard to win 12 or 13 games in a row up there. And they won last week with sitting most of their players. I mean, they played Robert Griffin III. They got three Heisman Trophy winners on their team. Robert Griffin III and, you know, their back, Mark Ingram, and Lamar Jackson.
Yeah. A lot of Heisman Trophies hanging around there. And by the way, though, it's still funny because of Jackson. I understand he runs for a lot of yardage. But even in this day and age, if you can still run the football, you're still going to win games.
Yeah, and their model is a lot like when Harbaugh's brother was a coach at the 49ers, Jim Harbaugh had Kaepernick, and mm-hmm. they were running the pistol,
yep.
which for fans there is when the quarterback's in the shotgun, but the back's behind him. So the back has a lot better angle to make a cut lining up behind the guy than he does beside him, because you're going horizontal,
sure.
sideways out of the shotgun. But in the pistol, you got that that thread of going up straight ahead or cutting back, and old Jackson's so good at riding him, a lot like what Kaepernick did. And you know, they went all the way to the championship game and lost to the Ravens running that stuff, because Kaepernick was such a good running quarterback.
So were you surprised that Air Force beat Washington State?
You know, I was surprised a little bit, because I thought Washington State would throw the ball better. But, you know, after watching that first drive, Washington State couldn't get off the field. Air Force had the ball for 12 minutes and 15 yep. seconds in the first quarter. And I've seen this happen to teams when I used to run the Wishbone at Oklahoma. The other team just panics on the other side, because their defense can't get off the field. So when their offense gets out there, they get away from their normal stuff, and all of a sudden they don't make any first downs, and then we got the ball again, you know. And I used to talk to our defensive coaches, and I said, hey, you guys got all these stats. And they said, yeah, we're really doing good. I said, hell, you're never on the field.
Exactly.
We got the ball the whole time.
Yeah.
Unless we were just hitting a long play on them. But Air Force, that guy's a good coach. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a really good coach. And I never will forget when he was a young cadet at Air Force. We were using Air Force as a kind of a deal where we would go out and watch them practice, because they were using the splits in their mind.
Was that Coach DeBerry?
Yeah, Fisher DeBerry. And he would get between the guard and the tackle. The split was a lot bigger than normal, so the defense would have to determine to stop the fullback. You'd have to crash the gap.
Yep.
Well, this guy was playing out there, and we played in a bowl game, and Fisher DeBerry said, hey, one of my guys is from so-and-so, could you help him get in the game? And we got him in the game, and so he was over here watching us practice this spring, and he came up to me. He said, Coach, you remember me getting in the game back in the 1980s? And he said, now I'm the coach at Air Force.
How about that for a story?
Yeah, in Switzer, we went out there to practice. We were watching them practice, and this four-star general came over. You know, it's a big deal for this general, I guess, to meet Barry. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And Barry's standing over there, and Barry looks at him and says, hey, you're a four-year letterman.
Something like that.
The guy laughed at him. That's pretty funny.
He loved that, didn't he? That was funny. And how weird is it that, like, their greatest all-time player is from Georgia in D. Dallas,
D. Dallas. Good quarterback. He was great.
Out of Royston.
And Coach DeBerry, the evolution there was Coach DeBerry came out there and was an assistant coach at Wofford and was running the Wishbone there under that Bradshaw guy.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They came out there, and Parcells had the job for a year, and then he left. He didn't want to coach anymore in college. And the guy that Ken Hatfield took over for him, and he brought Fisher out there. And then when Hatfield went to Arkansas first and then Clemson,
yeah.
Fisher got the job, and the rest is history. I mean, but I've never – you talk about analysts and coaches and all, they got so many coaches out at Air Force. Every player has a coach.
Is that true? See, I wouldn't have thought that.
Because they got all these people that are wanting to get into coaching that are in the Air Force.
That's true.
So they get stationed out there, and they're helper, you know. And they got their team, and then they got their plebe team, and they got unlimited amount of players. I mean, they don't have to go by the 85 scholarship.
That's true.
But, you know, they're having to. And the other thing that I always thought was funny, they would rather play on the road than at home sometime, because the players don't have to wear their uniforms all the time, and they got all this meeting time. But if they're playing at home, they have to go to classes and do everything just like they would if they were there. And that's part of the deal.
Don't
get me wrong. You got to go to class. But they, you know, they're going to a 5:00 class on Friday, you know, and they're playing a game the next day.
That's a good point. And, like, they're not just putting on their flip-flops and shorts and heading to class.
They got a regimen out there, but they really are well-coached, and they've kept that tradition going through the years. And it's going to be interesting to see today, can Kansas State get off the field against Navy?
Yeah.
I mean, that Navy quarterback's
– Woo, that guy's the goods.
I mean, he keeps the ball. I mean, I don't know how he stays alive. He gets hit so much.
And, I mean, he's an NFL prospect guy. Maybe not quarterback, but
– good athlete.
Yeah, yeah. I guess he's the reason that or one of the reasons Trump's passed that rule or whatever about letting these guys go to the pros before they have to use their service time or whatever it is. I know I explained that horribly, but you know what I'm talking
about. They're eligible to go to the draft before they're done with their military commitment.
One guy in place for Dallas linebacker was in the Air Force, wasn't he? Sean Lee?
Yes, yeah.
So, what's the latest on Garrett? Has anything happened today?
Not that I've seen in the last couple of hours. I'll have to browse Twitter now.
Well, his contract expires
January.
Yeah, so that might be one of those where that just happens.
Jerry Jones. I mean, hard to believe this guy's been the head coach for 10 years.
I know.
And they've only won one playoff game, one or two, right?
I think so. I think that's it.
Mm-hmm. I think it is just one. Nothing new on Jason Garrett. Still the coach of the Dallas Cowboys.
So Mullins hadn't got the job yet.
Not yet.
People are saying that Mullins would go there because of Prescott, but you know, he just doesn't strike me as a NFL coach. I guess he could, but
a lot of people think that. So in the new age of the NFL, you talked about like Lamar Jackson and folks like Dak Prescott, maybe Mullen is the right mind for that. I'm with you. I don't see it, but I could see a team taking a chance on him. What do they have to lose?
Especially with a coach like Mullen that has more of a reputation of being a coach than a recruiter.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, that's the thing.
They say some of these college coaches haven't done well up there. That's true, but a lot of these pro coaches started out in college, but then coached in the pros for a long time. I mean, hey, Bill Walsh coached at Stanford. They didn't do too bad.
I remember asking Coach Herrick about that one time. He's like, said, yeah, the college coaches, they go to the NBA or the NFL or whatever, and they struggle. He's like, yeah, because most of the time they're inheriting a terrible team.
Exactly. You don't usually get to inherit a team like
that. Exactly. You're not taking over a team.
It's going to be interesting to see if Josh McDaniels finally leaves the Patriots again. You know, with all this,
like he's the coach in waiting,
this could be the blow up of the Patriots. Them losing the fact they lost to the Dolphins the other day, the team they beat 43-0 earlier in the year, and then lose to ex coach Flores, who used to be the D coordinator. And now they're going to have to go the hard road here. I mean, they got to win against the Titans, then they got to go to Kansas City, and then they got to go to Ravens. That's a tough road to hoe.
Coach Donnan here in the studio with us. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with more. We'll talk more about the bowls and get his keys to the game. The Sugar Bowl tomorrow night at 8:45. It's 9:30.
Heart and soul.
In the final touches of the morning show, 960 The Ref, presented by St. Mary's Medical Group, Logan Dave and Coach D, and we got the jukebox cranked up for New Year's Eve. What do we got, Coach?
Got Heart and Soul by the Cliftones.
Is this what the dogs need to have a little bit of tomorrow night?
That's what we're going to do. We're going to play together, Heart and Soul.
Love it. Going to take a group effort with the players that are there. And we're going to get your keys to the game now.
I want to ask Coach a question.
I guess heart and soul is number one, right? Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Here's something I've never asked you. We were talking about when coaching searches go on and you're trying to transition from one team to the next, and you did that. We know how the story went down with you coming from Marshall to Georgia. How did it go down when you went from Oklahoma to Marshall?
Well, you know, we were just finishing up the year, and they had some interviews in Dallas. Different guys went into Dallas to interview, and I'd just gotten back from interviewing at Wisconsin. I'd gone to Chicago and interviewed, but I knew I wasn't going to get that job. Barry Alvarez had, you know, I had never recruited Chicago and all that. So,
yeah.
But I did benefit from the interview, so I went down there to Dallas and had the interview, and then with the AD and the committee, and then I had to go up to Huntington for the final interview. And
so the interview you had in Dallas was after this, your bowl game.
Yeah, okay. This preliminary thing. He talked about three or four guys, but
right.
One of the best things I ever said though in an interview was this guy asked me on the committee. He says, "What do you think the other coaches in the Southern Conference are thinking would think about you getting here?" You know, and I said, "Well, I can guarantee you one thing: they're hoping I don't get the job." You know, it's cocky, but the
yeah,
guy,
that's a great
liked,
answer.
They liked it, you know, and we did a good job at that. But
yeah,
but it's different. You know, these committees and everything. You don't get as much of that now. You got all these search firms that really check everybody out. But I think it's really interesting that everybody that's a head coach now in the playoff games was moved up from within. You know,
yeah.
All of those guys, three of them hadn't been a head coach, and Ogeron had been one at Ole Miss. But he certainly turned it around. But I think it's just there's always pros and cons, but three of the best ever, Paterno, Osborne, and Switzer, all moved up from within. There's always good guys on your staff that are capable. It takes more than just a head coach. So, you know, there's a lot of that happening.
Our man Stevie T has emailed in, Coach, and he says, I guess when we were talking about quarterbacks and transfers, he said, now in this day and age, would you consider a grad transfer quarterback or a top 10 backup QB in the transfer portal a better option than having a five-star coming in as your starting quarterback as a freshman?
I think it's a little bit of both. You got to look at the maturity level of that freshman and what he can do as far as what you're looking at with your supporting cast. If you got a really good supporting cast, you might want to give him the keys to the car, particularly if you got a good defense. But in the case of us, you know, with Fromm up in the air, who knows what he's going to do. You know, you can't blame if he goes and declares, but I would think that would be something we'd look at just because of the no experience at all behind Coach Smart's got to look at that. You know, I like Bennett. I mean, even though he hasn't played much, I think he can do the job. He's not an elite quarterback. And then, you know, Dwan Mathis, I really think he's got a lot of potential, but things are up in the air with his injury. You know, anytime you have a operation on your brain, Beck looks like a guy that's got the big arm. You know, his footwork is something he's got to work on. But I'm sure we'll look at all the different things, a transfer, senior transfer, or a junior college guy. Who knows what it might be. But that's just my thinking.
Well, you got to, like we were talking about earlier,
cover all bases.
You got to cover all bases and plan ahead.
Yeah. But
if you don't, you're being negligent.
One of our weakest points with Cager getting hurt and losing Holloman like we did and losing those three guys, I really think we've extremely fortified the receiver position. We've got Burton coming in, a big-time receiver from the West Coast. We've got Roseme, who's a fast guy from Florida. We've got Arian Smith, and we've got Robinson, this kid from over here close to Atlanta. All these guys are really going to be – the only thing I would think we might, based on the last month of recruiting with the youth of our receivers, we might look for another guy like Cage or maybe a senior, graduate senior, guy that's got the experience coming in to go with Pickens and Blaylock and, you know, Kyaris Jackson.
I was going to bring up Pickens, too, because he's had a phenomenal freshman year, but he's a true freshman out there. What kind of strides do you expect from a freshman to a sophomore in college?
I just want to see him keep maturing, you know, not making the bad decisions on the field. And but he's an elite player, there's no question. I think he can surface tomorrow night, too. I think he'll do extremely well. I mean, he's the kind of guy that you see playing for Ohio State and Oklahoma and LSU. You know, but LSU doesn't have a five-star receiver. Jordan Jefferson's three-star receiver. He caught four touchdown passes the other night.
Hmm.
I mean, those are all five stars in my opinion, too. Yeah. And we don't get caught up in the stars as much as just developing the guys. Mm-hmm. And then, like I said, Darnell Washington, I think he's an impact guy that can play right away, 6'8", 230, runs like a deer. He'll be good coming in. But and we got some really good young offensive linemen coming in to fortify that. And defensively, another guy you can watch in that game Saturday, Ringo from the West Coast, out there in Phoenix, be playing on Saturday in that All-American game out there, Army All-American. I feel like he's another guy that has signed the papers here and is going to commit to us on Saturday and will be an early enrollee.
Hope so.
Coach, with the way offenses have evolved over the last 20, 30, 40 years, is it harder to be, in this day and age, a freshman running back or a freshman receiver to get on the field?
I think probably running back is a little easier because you do have to do some protections.
Right.
But most of the protections now are just so RPO oriented. It's a run and it can become a pass, as compared to having four or five different. You used to have man protection, zone protection, slide, scat, you know, all these things. But now you don't have quite as many protections. Receivers just have to learn a lot of nuances about reading coverages. And, you know, in our league, people use so many coverages that show you something and play an X. You know, they'll line up on you and then bail. They'll line up inside and then go outside and play cover two. They'll line up outside and jump inside. You play two man. I mean, they just – you got to learn how to read coverages. I'd say it's more difficult as a receiver. Offensive line's probably the hardest.
I was going to say, that's the toughest one. And Thomas went from right tackle starter as a freshman to left tackle the last 2 years.
Yeah, and I think Cade Mays – would do a phenomenal job, but we're going to get tested on the edge. These two guys rush the passer extremely well. We're going to have our guards doing a double read. You know, by that I mean they got the inside gap, but if that backer's not plugging, they're going to have to help on those outside guys because they'll try to speed rush, then they'll spin inside and come in, and hopefully we can double those guys some, you know, with those guards and also with our backs and tight end. But we're going to have a situation at running back where as inexperienced as we've been at the receiver position, losing Cager and Blaylock, you know, without them. But now we're going to be playing probably without Swift and for sure without Harrion. So none of these guys that are playing, Zeus or Cook or Kenny McIntosh, have over 25 carries, do they? How many carries?
No.
What's the most?
It's got to be close. Zeus might be your closest, but you're right.
So we're going to be going with two new tackles, a new guard, new guys in the mm-hmm. backfield. Receiver-wise, I think we'll have Simmons and Robertson and Pickens. And then in the secondary, we'll have Sean and Chris Smith probably back there.
And make no mistake, the pass rush you talk about that Baylor has, they are well aware, obviously, of Georgia's situation, and they are going to try to exploit that from the first possession, you would think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No question.
Zeus has 60 carries.
60? Really?
That's incredible. That sneaked past me.
Mm-hmm.
He's
a veteran.
He just hasn't, right. He hasn't broken that long one we're waiting on yet.
Cook has 28, and McIntosh has 19. So
I think Cook's going to have a coming out party.
I hope so.
That'd be great.
I think he'll have some smoke runs.
Well, we're sort of getting keys to the game, but let's officially get your keys to the game.
Well, we're not going to put the keys out there for me to take. You got to move those
take
out
Logan's
of the way.
Logan's keys.
It's a local move joke.
Just jingle them. There you go.
Logan's keys look a little bit like mine, and I took them one time. But it's like that time I went in place to get something to eat, and I saw one of my doctor friends, and I walked over and started talking to him, and then I started drinking his drink. Got his mixed up. He looked at me, what are you doing here? But here's the deal to me, and I think Kirby's really focused on, hey, we're going to play with the guys that are playing. But you know, we learned a lesson last year that, you know, you got to have the same kind of preparation for this game that you would for SEC game or SEC championship game. You just can't go down there and not really function like you need to. And I think our preparation here was great. And from what I'm hearing, they've done well down there. And it's just a case of, this is a good team. We've played against more talented teams, maybe for sure, but I think the main thing for us is the key is offensively. We got to get where we got some early success where we're not just everybody's thinking what's wrong with Georgia instead of what's right with us. It's just been a continuing, and there's a lot of reasons to think that too, because we haven't functioned like you would think we would. So some early success on offense, defense, establishing the fact we can stone them, you know, where they don't go over the top on us. These guys can throw the ball deep now. They take some deep shots. And then the kicking game last year was horrendous down there. We had a bad punt, and we had another punt where we actually hit the ground with our knee on a low snap. And, you know, so we got to surface with that. But I feel like, and I'm not just being a town crier here as far as being positive, but we got a better team than them. We're young in certain positions, but I feel like having Coach Luke come in here kind of re-energize our offensive line from a standpoint. You got to prove yourself again with a new coach. And these guys that hadn't been able to play, you know, it was good to have a new coach for Erickson, to have a guy believe in him, and he'll come out there and do a good job. And I feel better about the game than maybe some people do, but just because I know what our capabilities are. We get some big plays early and get out on these guys, we'll be okay.
It's weird. I just feel like I know less about Baylor than a lot of opponents.
Well, that's true. I mean, you know, they're kind of a – they had some close games. I mean, they went overtime with TCU. But they won. I mean, anytime
– yeah.
Even Dan Mullen will tell you, if you win 11 games, you need to be in the Hall of Fame. But, boy, he just grinds my gears to hear him saying, hey, we could be a top five team.
Yeah.
Come on, really? You think they're a top five team?
You know, considering the difference between one, two, and three, and then four through 10, yeah, maybe they could be – if they're top five, Georgia's number four.
Well, if we would lose, they could probably be in the top five.
Yeah.
But – I think the committee certainly proved that they thought really highly of us when after we lost 36-10 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
They kept us at five.
Yeah.
So, but I just, Dan Mullen, like to saddle on an old horse, he chaps your butt.
Well, the funny thing is, it's like, well, they only lost to LSU by two touchdowns and Georgia lost to LSU by four touchdowns. Like, yeah, but Georgia beat Florida on the field.
The
yeah,
transitive thing is
I know, it just drives me crazy. Grinds my gears.
He's a good coach. He's just trying to promote his program, which I can understand. You got to do that. But
he just goes about it in a weird way.
Grantham shouldn't have let him score, though, and cost all these people all that money.
The Bear took care of his folks. I can tell you that right now. Anyway. Coach,
the bear
took care of his folks. It's been a great year. Thank you so much. We've enjoyed it.
Appreciate all the people out here too, behind the scenes, and your wife and everybody. Just do a good job, make me feel at home, and we had a good year. I hope Dogs finish it off tomorrow in the first one of 2020. Glad to add Logan to the team here. And
thank you, Coach.
Second best fisherman in the league.
That's right. Hey, I showed you some pictures during the break. I'm
serious,
proving it now.
Glad to have you. You've done a good job of preparing. And, of course, the man, the myth, the legend here. How many years now you been here?
Oh, God, 152, I think.
How many years?
Well, I mean, I've been working at the radio station. I was in college when I started working.
So only 10 years?
Only 10 years. 10 years. That's right, yes.
Really good decade.
We actually played music back then.
Have you hit the big 5-0 yet?
Yep.
Oh, man.
It's in the rearview mirror, yes. Yes.
Yeah, I was in a grocery store, which I don't go the other day, and this little kid was looking at this other guy. He said, how old do you think that guy is? And his father said, ask him, and he said, how old are you? And he said, 76. And he said, God, he's 76. Hey, the old coach can be 75 here in about 29 days.
That's right, big birthday coming up. How old were you when you took the Georgia job? I can do the math.
50.
You were 50, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
About the same age as you. I was 44 when I got at Marshall.
Got Marshall, okay, yeah.
All right, let's go.
Coach,
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Baylor,
thanks so much.
Beat the Bears.
Looking forward to 2020. Coach Donnan, we love him. Thank you very much, and we'll be right back to wrap things up for the year here on The Ref.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, They all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.